what the person is saying. If you think about it, when you judge someone else or their opinion, it doesn't really say anything about the other person, but it says quite a bit about your need to be judgmental. I still catch myself criticizing other points of view, but far less than I used to. All that changed was my intention to find the grain of truth in other positions. If you practice this simple strategy, some wonderful things will begin to happen. You'll begin to understand those you interact with. Others will be drawn to your accepting and loving energy. Your learning curve will be enhanced, and perhaps most important, you'll feel much better about yourself.
See, the glass is already broken, and everything else too.
This is a Buddhist teaching that I learned over 20 years ago. It has provided me again and again with greatly needed perspective to guide me toward my goal of a more accepting self. The essence of this teaching is that all of life is in a constant state of change. Everything has a beginning and everything has an end. Every tree begins with a seed and will eventually transform back into earth. Every rock is formed and every rock will vanish. In our modern world, this means that every car, every machine, every piece of clothing is created and all will wear out and crumble. It's only a matter of when. Our bodies are born and they will die. A glass is created and will eventually break. There is peace to be found in this teaching. When you expect something to break, you're not surprised or disappointed when it does. Instead of becoming immobilized when something is destroyed, you feel grateful for the time you have had. The easiest place to start is with the simple things. A glass of water, for example. Pull out your favorite drinking glass. Take a moment to look at and appreciate its beauty and all it does for you. Now, imagine that same glass as already broken, shattered all over the floor. Try to maintain the perspective that, in time, everything disintegrates and returns to its initial form. Obviously, no one wants their favorite drinking glass or anything else to be broken. This philosophy is not a prescription for becoming passive or apathetic, but for making peace with the way things are. When your drinking glass does break, this philosophy allows you to maintain your perspective. Rather than thinking, "Oh my God," you'll find yourself thinking, "Ah, there it goes." Play with this awareness, and you'll find yourself not only keeping your cool, but appreciating life as never before.
Understand the statement, "Wherever you go, there you are."
This is the title of a super book by Jon Kabat-Zinn. As the title suggests, wherever you go, you take yourself with you. The significance of this statement is that it can teach you to stop constantly wishing you were somewhere else. We tend to believe that if we were somewhere else, on vacation, with another partner, in a different career, a different home, a different circumstance, somehow we would be happier and more content. We wouldn't. The truth is, if you have destructive mental habits, if you get annoyed and bothered easily, if you feel angry and frustrated a great deal of the time, or if you're constantly wishing things were different, these identical tendencies will follow you wherever you go. And the reverse is also true. If you are a generally happy person who rarely gets annoyed and bothered, then you can move from place to place, from person to person, with very little negative impact. Someone once asked me, "What are the people like in California?" I asked him, "What are the people like in your home state?" He replied, "Selfish and greedy." I told him that he would probably find the people in California to be selfish and greedy. Something wonderful begins to happen with this simple realization that life, like an automobile, is driven from the inside out, not the other way around. As you focus more on becoming more peaceful with where you are, rather than focusing on where you would rather be, you begin to find peace right now in the present. Then, as you move around, try new things, and meet new people, you carry that sense of inner peace with you. It's absolutely true that wherever you go, there you are.
breathe before you speak.
This simple strategy has had remarkable results for virtually everyone I know who has tried it. The almost immediate results include increased patience, added perspective, and, as a side benefit, more gratitude and respect from others. The strategy itself is remarkably simple. It involves nothing more than pausing, breathing, after the person to whom you are speaking is finished. At first, the time gap between your voices may seem like an eternity, but in reality, it amounts to only a fraction of a second of actual time. You will get used to the power and beauty of breathing, and you will come to appreciate it as well. It will bring you closer to, and earn you more respect from, virtually everyone you come in contact with. You'll find that being listened to is one of the rarest and most treasured gifts you can offer. All it takes is intention and practice. If you observe the conversations around you, you'll notice that, often, what many of us do is simply wait for our chance to speak. We're not really listening to the other person, but simply waiting for an opening to express our own view. We often complete other people's sentences, or say things like, "Yeah, yeah," or "I know," very rapidly, urging them to hurry up so that we can have our turn. It seems that talking to one another is sometimes more like sparring back and forth, like fighters or ping pong balls, than it is enjoying or learning from the conversation. This harried form of communication encourages us to criticize points of view, overreact, misinterpret meaning, impute false motives, and form opinions, all before our fellow communicator has even finished speaking. No wonder we are so often annoyed, bothered, and irritated with one another. Sometimes, with our poor listening skills, it's a miracle that we have any friends at all. I spent most of my life waiting for my turn to speak. If you're at all like me, you'll be pleasantly amazed at the softer reactions and looks of surprise as you let others completely finish their thought before you begin yours. Often, you will be allowing someone to feel listened to for the very first time. You will sense a feeling of relief coming from the person to whom you are speaking, and a much calmer, less rushed feeling between the two of you. No need to worry that you won't get your turn to speak. You will. In fact, it will be more rewarding to speak because the person you are speaking to will pick up on your respect and patience and will begin to do the same.
Be grateful when you're feeling good and graceful when you're feeling bad.
The happiest person on earth isn't always happy. In fact, the happiest people all have their fair share of low moods, problems, disappointments, and heartache. Often the difference between a person who is happy and someone who is unhappy isn't how often they get low or even how low they drop, but instead it's what they do with their low moods. How do they relate to their changing feelings? Most people have it backward. When they are feeling down, they roll up their sleeves and get to work. They take their low moods very seriously and try to figure out and analyze what's wrong. They try to force themselves out of their low state, which tends to compound the problem rather than solve it. When you observe peaceful, relaxed people, you find that when they are feeling good, they are very grateful. They understand that both positive and negative feelings come and go, and that there will come a time when they won't be feeling so good. To happy people, this is okay. It's the way of things. They accept the inevitability of passing feelings. So, when they are feeling depressed, angry, or stressed out, they relate to these feelings with the same openness and wisdom. Rather than fight their feelings and panic simply because they are feeling bad, they accept their feelings, knowing that this too shall pass. Rather than stumbling and fighting against their negative feelings, they are graceful in their acceptance of them. This allows them to come gently and gracefully out of negative feeling states into more positive states of mind. One of the happiest people I know is someone who also gets quite low from time to time. The difference, it seems, is that he has become comfortable with his low moods. It's almost as though he doesn't really care because he knows that, in due time, he will be happy again. To him, it's no big deal. The next time you're feeling bad, rather than fight it, try to relax. See if, instead of panicking, you can be graceful and calm. Know that if you don't fight your negative feelings, if you are graceful, they will pass away just as surely as the sun sets in the evening.
Become a less aggressive driver.
Where do you get the most uptight? If you're like most people, driving in traffic is probably high on your list. To look at most major freeways these days, you'd think you're on a racetrack instead of a roadway. There are three excellent reasons for becoming a less aggressive driver. First, when you are aggressive, you put yourself and everyone around you in extreme danger. Second, driving aggressively is extremely stressful. Your blood pressure goes up, your grip on the wheel tightens, your eyes are strained, and your thoughts are spinning out of control. Finally, you end up saving no time in getting to where you want to go. Recently, I was driving south from Oakland to San Jose. Traffic was heavy, but moving. I noticed an extremely aggressive and angry driver weaving in and out of lanes, speeding up and slowing down. Clearly, he was in a hurry. For the most part, I remained in the same lane for the entire 40-mile journey. I was listening to a new audio tape I had just purchased and daydreaming along the way. I enjoyed the trip a great deal because driving gives me a chance to be alone. As I was exiting off the freeway, the aggressive driver came up behind me and raced on by. Without realizing it, I had actually arrived in San Jose ahead of him. All of his weaving, rapid acceleration, and putting families at risk had earned him nothing except perhaps some high blood pressure and a great deal of wear and tear on his vehicle. On average, he and I had driven at the same speed. The same principle applies when you see drivers speeding past you so that they can beat you to the next stoplight. It simply doesn't pay to speed. This is especially true if you get a ticket and have to spend 8 hours in traffic school. It'll take you years of dangerous speeding to make up this time alone. When you make the conscious decision to become a less aggressive driver, you begin using your time in the car to relax. Try to see your driving not only as a way of getting you somewhere, but as a chance to breathe and to reflect. Rather than tensing your muscles, see if you can relax them instead. I even have a few audio tapes that are specifically geared toward muscular relaxation. Sometimes I pop one in and listen. By the time I reach my destination, I feel more relaxed than I did before getting into the car. During the course of your lifetime, you're probably going to spend a great deal of time driving. You can spend those moments being frustrated, or you can use them wisely. If you do the latter, you'll be a more relaxed person.
Relax.
What does it mean to relax? Despite hearing this term thousands of times during the course of our lives, very few people have deeply considered what it's really about. When you ask people, which I have done many times, what it means to relax, most will answer in a way that suggests that relaxing is something you plan to do later. You do it on vacation, in a hammock, when you retire, or when you get everything done. This implies, of course, that most other times, the other 95% of your life, should be spent nervous, agitated, rushed, and frenzied. Very few actually come out and say so, but this is the obvious implication. Could this explain why so many of us operate as if life were one great big emergency? Most of us postpone relaxation until our in-basket is empty. Of course, it never is. It's useful to think of relaxation as a quality of heart that you can access on a regular basis, rather than something reserved for some later time. You can relax now. It's helpful to remember that relaxed people can still be super achievers, and in fact, that relaxation and creativity go hand in hand. When I'm feeling uptight, for example, I don't even try to write. But when I feel relaxed, my writing flows quickly and easily. Being more relaxed involves training yourself to respond differently to the dramas of life, turning your melodrama into a mellow drama. It comes in part from reminding yourself over and over again with loving kindness and patience that you have a choice in how you respond to life. You can learn to relate to your thinking as well as your circumstances in new ways. With practice, making these choices will translate into a more relaxed self.
Adopt a child through the mail.
While I don't want to turn this audiobook into an advertisement for service agencies, I do have to say that my experience of adopting children through the mail has been extremely positive. No, you don't actually adopt the child, but you do get to help one out while at the same time getting to know them. The experience has brought tremendous joy and satisfaction to my entire family. My daughter has an adoptee and has enjoyed and learned from the experience a great deal. My daughter and her pal regularly write to each other and draw pictures that we hang up. They enjoy hearing about each other's lives. Each month, you contribute a very small amount of money to the agency in charge of helping the children. The money is used to help the children and their parents with the necessities of life, which makes sending their children to school and caring for their needs a little easier. I think that the reason we enjoy this type of giving so much is that it's interactive. So often when you give to a charity, you have no way of knowing who you're helping. In this instance, you not only get to know who, but you have the privilege of getting to know them as well. Also, the regularity of the ongoing relationship reminds you how fortunate you are to be in a position to help. For me, and for many people that I know, this type of giving brings forth feelings of gratitude. There are many fine agencies to choose from, but my personal favorite is Children Incorporated out of Richmond, Virginia. 1-800-538-5381.
Turn your melodrama into a melodrama.
In a certain respect, this strategy is just another way of saying, don't sweat the small stuff. Many people live as if life were a melodrama, an extravagantly theatrical play in which action and plot predominate. Sound familiar? In dramatic fashion, we blow things out of proportion and make a big deal out of little things. We forget that life isn't as bad as we're making it out to be. We also forget that when we're blowing things out of proportion, we are the ones doing the blowing. I've found that simply reminding myself that life doesn't have to be a soap opera is a powerful method of calming down. When I get too worked up or start taking myself too seriously, which happens more than I like to admit, I say to myself something like, "Here I go again, my soap opera is starting." Almost always, this takes the edge off my seriousness and helps me laugh at myself. Often, this simple reminder enables me to change the channel to a more peaceful station. My melodrama is transformed into a mellow drama. If you've ever watched a soap opera, you've seen how the characters will take little things so seriously as to ruin their lives over them. Someone says something to offend them, looks at them wrong, or flirts with their spouse. Their response is usually, "Oh my gosh, how could this happen to me?" Then they exacerbate the problem by talking to others about how awful it is. They turn life into an emergency, a melodrama. The next time you feel stressed out, experiment with this strategy. Remind yourself that life isn't an emergency and turn your melodrama into a mellow drama.
Read articles and books with entirely different points of view from your own and try to learn something.
Have you ever noticed that practically everything you read justifies and reinforces your own opinions and views on life? The same is true with our radio and television listening and viewing choices as well. In fact, on America's most popular radio talk show, callers often identify themselves as ditto heads, meaning, "I already agree with everything you say. Tell me more." Liberals, conservatives, we're all the same. We form opinions and then spend our entire lifetimes validating what we believe to be true. This rigidity is sad because there is so much we can learn from points of view that are different from our own. It's also sad because the stubbornness it takes to keep our heart and mind closed to everything other than our own point of view creates a great deal of inner stress. A closed mind is always fighting to keep everything else at arm's length. We forget that we're all equally convinced that our way of looking at the world is the only correct way. We forget that two people who disagree with one another can often use the identical examples to prove their own point of view, and both sides can be articulate and convincing. Knowing this, we can either buckle down and get even more stubborn, Or we can lighten up and try to learn something new. For just a few minutes a day, whatever your slant on life, try making a gentle effort to read articles and/or books with different points of view. You don't need to change your core beliefs or your deepest held positions. All you're doing is expanding your mind and opening your heart to new ideas. This new openness will reduce the stress it takes to keep other points of view away. In addition to being very interesting, this practice helps you see the innocence in others as well as helping you become more patient. You'll become a more relaxed, philosophic person because you'll begin to sense the logic in other points of view. My wife and I subscribe to both the most conservative as well as the most liberal newsletters in America. I'd say that both have broadened our perspective on life.
Do one thing at a time.
The other day, I was driving on the freeway and noticed a man who, while driving in the fast lane, was shaving, drinking a cup of coffee, and reading the newspaper. Perfect, I thought to myself, as just that morning I was trying to think of an appropriate example to point out the craziness of our frenzied society. How often do we try to do more than one thing at once? We have cordless phones that are supposed to make our lives easier, but in some respects, they make our lives more confusing. My wife and I were at a friend's home for dinner a while ago and noticed her talking on the phone while simultaneously answering the door, checking on dinner, and changing her daughter's diaper. After she washed her hands, of course. Many of us have the same tendency when we're speaking to someone and our mind is somewhere else, or when we're doing three or four chores all at the same time. When you do too many things at once, it's impossible to be present moment oriented. Thus, you not only lose out on much of the potential enjoyment of what you are doing, but you also become far less focused and effective. An interesting exercise is to block out periods of time where you commit to doing only one thing at a time. Whether you're washing dishes, talking on the phone, driving a car, playing with your child, talking to your spouse, or reading a magazine, try to focus only on that one thing. Be present in what you are doing. Concentrate. You'll notice two things beginning to happen. First, you'll actually enjoy what you are doing, even something mundane like washing dishes or cleaning out a closet. When you're focused, rather than distracted, it enables you to become absorbed and interested in your activity, whatever it might be. Second, you'll be amazed at how quickly and efficiently you'll get things done. Since I've become more present moment oriented, my skills have increased in virtually all areas of my life: writing, reading, cleaning house, and speaking on the phone. You can do the same thing. It all starts with your decision to do one thing at a time.
Count to 10.
When I was growing up, my father used to count out loud to 10 when he was angry with my sisters and me. It was a strategy he and many other parents used to cool down before deciding what to do next. I've improved this strategy by incorporating the use of the breath. All you have to do is this. When you feel yourself getting angry, take a long, deep inhalation, and as you do, say the number 1 to yourself. Then, relax your entire body as you breathe out. Repeat the same process with the number 2, all the way through at least 10. If you're really angry, continue to 25. What you are doing here is clearing your mind with a mini version of a meditation exercise. The combination of counting and breathing is so relaxing that it's almost impossible to remain angry once you are finished. The increased oxygen in your lungs and the time gap between the moment you became angry and the time you finished the exercise enables you to increase your perspective. It helps make big stuff look like little stuff. The exercise is equally effective in working with stress or frustration. Whenever you feel a little off, give it a try. The truth is, this exercise is a wonderful way to spend a minute or two, whether or not you're angry. I've incorporated this strategy into my daily life simply because it's relaxing and I enjoy it. Often, it helps me to keep from getting angry in the first place.
Practice being in the eye of the storm.
The eye of the storm is that one specific spot in the center of a twister, hurricane, or tornado that is calm, almost isolated from the frenzy of activity. Everything around the center is violent and turbulent, but the center remains peaceful. How nice it would be if we too could be calm and serene in the midst of chaos, in the eye of the storm. Surprisingly enough, it's much easier than you might imagine to be in the eye of a human storm. What it takes is intention and practice. Suppose, for example, that you're going to a family gathering that is going to be chaotic. You can tell yourself that you're going to use the experience as an opportunity to remain calm. You can commit to being the one person in the room who is going to be an example of peace. You can practice breathing. You can practice listening. You can let others be right and enjoy the glory. The point is, you can do it if you set your mind to it. By starting out with harmless scenarios like family gatherings, cocktail parties, and birthday parties for children, you can build a track record and enjoy some success. You'll notice that by being in the eye of the storm, you will be more present moment oriented. You'll enjoy yourself more than ever before. Once you have mastered harmless circumstances like these, you can practice on more difficult areas of life, dealing with conflict, hardship, or grief. If you start slowly, have some success, and keep practicing, pretty soon you'll know how to live in the eye of the storm.
Be flexible with changes in your plans.
Once I get something in my mind, a plan, it can be tricky to let go of it and go with the flow. I was taught, and to some degree it's certainly true, that success or successfully completing a project requires perseverance. At the same time, however, inflexibility creates an enormous amount of inner stress and is often irritating and insensitive to other people. I like to do the majority of my writing in the wee hours of the morning. I might have the goal, in this project, for example, to complete one or two strategies before anyone else in the house wakes up. But what happens if my child wakes up early and walks upstairs to see me? My plans have certainly been altered, but how do I react? Or I might have the goal to go out for a run before going to the office. What happens if I get an emergency call from the office and have to skip my run? There are countless potential examples for all of us, times when our plans suddenly change, something we thought was going to take place doesn't, someone doesn't do what they said they would do, you make less money than you thought you would, someone changes your plans without your consent, you have less time than previously planned, something unexpected comes up, and on it goes. The question to ask yourself is, what's really important? We often use the excuse that it's natural to be frustrated when our plans change. That depends, however, on what your priorities are. Is it more important to stick to some rigid writing schedule or to be available to my child? Is missing a 30-minute run worth getting upset over? The more general question is, what's more important, getting what I want and keeping my plans, or learning to go with the flow? Clearly, to become a more peaceful person, you must prioritize being flexible over rigidity most of the time. Obviously, there will be exceptions. I've also found it helpful to expect that a certain percentage of plans will change. If I make allowances in my mind for this inevitability, then when it happens, I can say, here is one of those inevitabilities. You'll find that if you create the goal to become more flexible, some wonderful things will begin to happen. You'll feel more relaxed, yet you won't sacrifice any productivity. You may even become more productive because you won't need to expend so much energy being upset and worried. I've learned to trust that I will keep my deadlines, achieve most of my goals, and honor my responsibilities, despite the fact that I may have to alter my plans slightly, or even completely. Finally, the people around you will be more relaxed too. They won't feel like they have to walk around on eggshells if, by some chance, your plans have to change.
Think of what you have instead of what you want.
In over a dozen years as a stress consultant, one of the most pervasive and destructive mental tendencies I've seen is that of focusing on what we want instead of what we have. It doesn't seem to make any difference how much we have. We just keep expanding our list of desires, which guarantees we will remain dissatisfied. The mindset that says, "I'll be happy when this desire is fulfilled," is the same mindset that will repeat itself once that desire is met. A friend of ours closed escrow on his new home on a Sunday. The very next time we saw him, he was talking about his next house that was going to be even bigger. He isn't alone. Most of us do the very same thing. We want this or that. If we don't get what we want, we keep thinking about all that we don't have, and we remain dissatisfied. If we do get what we want, we simply recreate the same thinking in our new circumstances. So, despite getting what we want, we still remain unhappy. Happiness can't be found when we are yearning for new desires. Luckily, there is a way to be happy. It involves changing the emphasis of our thinking from what we want to what we have. Rather than wishing your spouse were different, try thinking about her wonderful qualities. Instead of complaining about your salary, be grateful that you have a job. Rather than wishing you were able to take a vacation to Hawaii, think of how much fun you've had close to home. The list of possibilities is endless. Each time you notice yourself falling into the "I wish life were different" trap, back off and start over. Take a breath and remember all that you have to be grateful for. When you focus not on what you want, but on what you have, you end up getting more of what you want anyway. If you focus on the good qualities of your spouse, she'll be more loving. If you are grateful for your job, rather than complaining about it, you'll do a better job, be more productive, and probably end up getting a raise anyway. If you focus on ways to enjoy yourself around home, rather than waiting to enjoy yourself in Hawaii, you'll end up having more fun. If you ever do get to Hawaii, you'll be in the habit of enjoying yourself. And if by some chance you don't, you'll have a great life anyway. Make a note to yourself to start thinking more about what you have than what you want. If you do, your life will start appearing much better than before. For perhaps the first time in your life, you'll know what it means to feel satisfied.
Practice ignoring your negative thoughts.
It has been estimated that the average human being has around 50,000 thoughts per day. That's a lot of thoughts. Some of these thoughts are going to be positive and productive. Unfortunately, however, many of them are also going to be negative, angry, fearful, pessimistic, worrisome. Indeed, the important question in terms of becoming more peaceful isn't whether or not you are going to have negative thoughts, you are. It's what you choose to do with the ones that you have. In a practical sense, you really have only two options when it comes to dealing with negative thoughts. You can analyze your thoughts, ponder, think through, study, think some more, or you can learn to ignore them, dismiss, pay less attention to, not take so seriously. This latter option, learning to take your negative thoughts less seriously, is infinitely more effective in terms of learning to be more peaceful. When you have a thought, any thought, that's all it is, a thought, it can't hurt you without your consent. For example, if you have a thought from your past, "I'm upset because my parents didn't do a very good job," you can get into it, as many do, which will create inner turmoil for you. You can give the thought significance in your mind, and you'll convince yourself that you should indeed be unhappy. Or you can recognize that your mind is about to create a mental snowball, and you can choose to dismiss the thought. This doesn't mean your childhood wasn't difficult. It may very well have been. But in this present moment, you have a choice of which thoughts to pay attention to. The same mental dynamic applies to thoughts of this morning, even 5 minutes ago. An argument that happened while you were walking out the door on your way to work is no longer an actual argument. It's a thought in your mind. This dynamic also applies to future-oriented thoughts of this evening, next week, or 10 years down the road. You'll find, in all cases, that if you ignore or dismiss a negative thought that fills your mind, a more peaceful feeling is only a moment away. And, in a more peaceful state of mind, your wisdom and common sense will tell you what to do. This strategy takes practice, but is well worth the effort.
Be willing to learn from friends and family.
One of the saddest observations I've made centers around how reluctant many of us are to learn from the people closest to us, our parents, spouses, children, and friends. Rather than being open to learning, we close ourselves off out of embarrassment, fear, stubbornness, or pride. It's almost as if we say to ourselves, "I have already learned all that I can or want to learn from this person. There is nothing else I can or need to learn." It's sad because often the people closest to us know us the best. They are sometimes able to see ways in which we are acting in a self-defeating manner and can offer very simple solutions. If we are too proud or stubborn to learn, we lose out on some wonderful, simple ways to improve our lives. I have tried to remain open to the suggestions of my friends and family. In fact, I have gone so far as to ask certain members of my family and a few of my friends, "What are some of my blind spots?" Not only does this make the person you are asking feel wanted and special, but you end up getting some terrific advice. It's such a simple shortcut for growth, yet almost no one uses it. All it takes is a little courage and humility and the ability to let go of your ego. This is especially true if you are in the habit of ignoring suggestions, taking them as criticism, or tuning out certain members of your family. Imagine how shocked they will be when you ask them sincerely for their advice. Pick something that you feel the person whom you are asking is qualified to answer. For example, I often ask my father for advice on business. Even if he happens to give me a bit of a lecture, it's well worth it. The advice he gives usually prevents me from having to learn something the hard way.
Be happy where you are.
Sadly, many of us continually postpone our happiness indefinitely. It's not that we consciously set out to do so, but that we keep convincing ourselves, "Someday I'll be happy." We tell ourselves we'll be happy when our bills are paid, when we get out of school, get our first job, a promotion. We convince ourselves that life will be better after we get married, have a baby, then another. Then we are frustrated that the kids aren't old enough. We'll be more content when they are. After that, we're frustrated that we have teenagers to deal with. We will certainly be happy when they are out of that stage. We tell ourselves that our life will be complete when our spouse gets his or her act together, when we get a nicer car, are able to go on a nice vacation, when we retire, and on and on and on. Meanwhile, life keeps moving forward. The truth is, there's no better time to be happy than right now. If not now, when? Your life will always be filled with challenges. It's best to admit this to yourself and decide to be happy anyway. One of my favorite quotes comes from Alfred de Souza. He said, "For a long time, it had seemed to me that life was about to begin, real life. But there was always some obstacle in the way, something to be got through first, some unfinished business, time still to be served, a debt to be paid. Then life would begin. At last it dawned on me that these obstacles were my life." This perspective has helped me to see that there is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way.
Remember that you become what you practice most.
Repeated practice is one of the most basic principles of most spiritual and meditative paths. In other words, whatever you practice most is what you will become. If you are in the habit of being uptight whenever life isn't quite right, repeatedly reacting to criticism by defending yourself, insisting on being right, allowing your thinking to snowball in response to adversity, or acting like life is an emergency, then, unfortunately, your life will be a reflection of this type of practice. You will be frustrated because, in a sense, you have practiced being frustrated. Likewise, however, you can choose to bring forth in yourself qualities of compassion, patience, kindness, humility, and peace, again, through what you practice. I guess it's safe to say that practice makes perfect. It makes sense, then, to be careful what you practice. This isn't to suggest that you make your entire life into a great big project where the goal is to be constantly improving yourself, only that it's immensely helpful to become conscious of your own habits, both internal and external. Where is your attention? How do you spend your time? Are you cultivating habits that are helpful to your stated goals? Is what you say you want your life to stand for consistent with what your life really stands for? Simply asking yourself these and other important questions and answering them honestly helps to determine which strategies will be most useful to you. Have you always said to yourself, "I'd like to spend more time by myself," or "I've always wanted to learn to meditate, yet somehow you've never found the time"? Sadly, many people spend far more time washing their car or watching reruns of television shows they don't even enjoy than they do making time for aspects of life that nurture their hearts. If you remember that what you practice, you will become, you may begin choosing different types of practice.
Quiet the mind.
Pascal said, "All of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone." I'm not sure I would go quite this far, but I am certain that a quiet mind is the foundation of inner peace, and inner peace translates into outer peace. Although there are many techniques for quieting the mind, such as reflection, deep breathing, contemplation, and visualization, the most universally accepted and regularly used technique is meditation. In as little as 5 to 10 minutes a day, you can train your mind to be still and quiet. This stillness can be incorporated into your daily life, making you less reactive and irritable, and giving you greater perspective to see things as small stuff rather than as emergencies. Meditation teaches you to be calm by giving you the experience of absolute relaxation. It teaches you to be at peace. There are many different forms and variations of meditation. Essentially, however, meditation involves emptying your mind. Usually, meditation is done alone in a quiet environment. You close your eyes and focus your attention on your breath, in and out, in and out. As thoughts enter your mind, you gently let them go and bring your attention back to your breath. Do this over and over again. Over time, you'll train yourself to keep your attention on your breath as you gently dismiss any stray thoughts. You'll quickly discover that meditation isn't easy. You will notice that your mind will fill with thoughts the moment you attempt to keep it still. It's rare for a beginner to be able to focus attention for more than a few seconds. The trick to becoming an effective meditator is to be gentle on yourself and to be consistent. Don't be discouraged. A few minutes each day will reap tremendous benefits over time. You can probably find a meditation class in your community, or, if you prefer, you can learn from a book, or better yet, an audio tape. It's hard to read with your eyes closed. My favorite resource is Larry Leshan's How to Meditate, available in both book and audio format. I don't know many people I would consider to be at peace with themselves who haven't spent at least a little time experimenting with meditation.
Take up yoga.
Like meditation, yoga is an extremely popular and effective method for becoming a more relaxed, easygoing person. For centuries, yoga has been used to clear and free the mind, giving people feelings of ease and equanimity. It's easy to do and takes only a few minutes a day. What's more, people of virtually any age and fitness level can participate. I once took a class at the health club that included both a 10-year-old boy and an 87-year-old man. Yoga is non-competitive in nature. You work and progress at your own speed and comfort level. Although yoga is physical in nature, its benefits are both physical and emotional. On the physical side, yoga strengthens the muscles and the spine, creating flexibility and ease of motion. On the emotional side, yoga is a tremendous stress reducer. It balances the body, mind, spirit connection, giving you a feeling of ease and peace. Yoga is practiced by engaging in a series of stretches, both gentle and challenging. The stretches are designed to open the body and lengthen the spine. The stretches focus on very specific, usually tight and constricted places: the neck, back, hips, legs, and spine. While you are stretching, you are also concentrating, focusing your attention on what you are doing. The effects of yoga are truly amazing. After only a few minutes, you feel more alive and open, peaceful, and relaxed. Your mind is clear. The rest of your day is easier and more focused. I used to believe that I was too busy to practice yoga. I felt I didn't have time. I'm now certain that the opposite is true. I don't have time not to practice yoga. It's too important not to do. It keeps me feeling young and energized. It's also a wonderful and peaceful way to spend time with family and/or friends. Rather than watching television together, my two daughters and I often flip on a yoga video and spend a few minutes stretching together. Like meditation, it's easy to find a local class at a community center, the YMCA, or health club. If you prefer to learn from a book, my favorite is Richard Hittleman's Yoga 28-Day Exercise Plan. There are also many fine videos you can learn from, as well as a magazine dedicated solely to yoga called Yoga Journal.
Make service an integral part of your life.
To become a kinder, more loving individual requires action. Yet, ironically, there is nothing specific you have to do, no prescription to follow. Rather, most genuine acts of kindness and generosity seem natural. They stem from a type of thinking where service and giving have been integrated into the person's thought process. Several teachers and philosophers that I have learned from have suggested that I begin my day by asking myself the question, how can I be of service? I have found this to be useful in reminding me of the multitude of ways that I can be helpful to others. When I take the time to ask this question, I find answers popping up all day long. If one of your goals is to be of help to others, you will find the most appropriate ways. Your chances to be of service are endless. Sometimes, the best way that I can be of service is to offer my home to a friend or even a stranger in need. Other times, it's to give my seat to an elderly person on the train, help a youngster across the monkey bars, speak to a group, write a book, help out in my daughter's school, write a check to charity, or pick up litter on the road. The key, I believe, is to remember that being of service isn't a one-time effort. It's not doing something nice for someone and then wondering why others aren't being nice too, or doing things for us. Instead, a life of service is a lifelong process, a way of thinking about life. Does the trash need to be taken out? If so, go ahead and take it out, even if it's not your turn. Is someone you know being difficult? Maybe they need a hug or someone to listen to them. Are you aware of a charity that is in trouble? Could you possibly give a little extra this month? I have learned that the best way to be of service is often very simple. It's those little, quiet, often unnoticed acts of kindness that I can choose on a daily basis. Being supportive of a new endeavor by my spouse, or simply taking the time and energy to listen. I know that I have a long way to go toward my goal of becoming a more selfless person. However, I also know that as I have attempted to integrate service into my life, I have felt better and better about the way I choose to live. There is an ancient saying, "Giving is its own reward." It's really true. When you give, you also receive. In fact, what you receive is directly proportional to what you give. As you give more freely of yourself in your own unique ways, you will experience more feelings of peace than you ever thought possible. Everyone wins, especially you.
Do a favor and don't ask for or expect one in return.
This is a strategy that can help you practice integrating service into your life. It will show you how easy it is and how good it feels to do something nice for someone without expecting anything in return. So often, either consciously or unconsciously, we want something from others, especially when we have done something for them. I cleaned the bathroom, she should clean the kitchen. Or, I took care of her child last week, she should offer this week. It's almost as though we keep score of our own good deeds rather than remembering that giving is its own reward. When you do something nice for someone, just to do it, you'll notice, if you're quiet enough inside yourself, a beautiful feeling of ease and peace. Just as vigorous exercise releases endorphins in your brain that make you feel good physically, your acts of loving kindness release the emotional equivalent. Your reward is the feeling you receive in knowing that you participated in an act of kindness. You don't need something in return or even a thank you. In fact, you don't even need to let the person know what you have done. What interferes with this peaceful feeling is our expectation of reciprocity. Our own thoughts interfere with our peaceful feelings as they clutter our minds, as we get caught up in what we think we want or need. The solution is to notice your "I want something in return" thoughts and gently dismiss them. In the absence of these thoughts, your positive feelings will return. See if you can think of something really thoughtful to do for someone and don't expect anything in return, whether it's surprising your spouse with a clean garage or organized desk, mowing your neighbor's lawn, or coming home early from work to give your spouse a break from the kids. When you complete your favor, see if you can tap into the warm feeling of knowing you have done something really nice without expecting anything from the person you have just helped. If you practice, I think you'll discover that the feelings themselves are reward enough.
Think of your problems as potential teachers.
Most people would agree that one of the greatest sources of stress in our lives is our problems. To a certain degree, this is true. A more accurate assessment, however, is that the amount of stress we feel has more to do with how we relate to our problems than it does with the problems themselves. In other words, how much of a problem do we make our problems? Do we see them as emergencies or as potential teachers? Problems come in many shapes, sizes, and degrees of seriousness, but all have one thing in common. They present us with something that we wish were different. The more we struggle with our problems, and the more we want them to go away, the worse they seem and the more stress they cause us. Ironically, and luckily, the opposite is also true. When we accept our problems as an inevitable part of life, when we look at them as potential teachers, it's as if a weight has been lifted off our shoulders. Think of a problem that you have struggled with for quite some time. How have you dealt with this problem up until now? If you're like most, you've probably struggled with it, mentally rehearsed it, analyzed it again and again, but have come up short. Where has all this struggle led you? Probably to even more confusion, and stress. Now, think of the same problem in a new way. Rather than push away the problem and resist it, try to embrace it. Mentally, hold the problem near to your heart. Ask yourself what valuable lesson or lessons this problem might be able to teach you. Could it be teaching you to be more careful or patient? Does it have anything to do with greed, envy, carelessness, or forgiveness, or something equally powerful? Whatever problems you are dealing with, chances are they could be thought of in a softer way that includes a genuine desire to learn from them. When you hold your problems in this light, they soften like a clenched fist that is opening. Give this strategy a try, and I think you'll agree that most problems aren't the emergencies we think they are. And usually, once we learn what we need to learn, they begin to go away.
Get comfortable not knowing.
There once was a village that had among its people a very wise old man. The villagers trusted this man to provide them answers to their questions and concerns. One day, a farmer from the village went to the wise man and said in a frantic tone, "Wise man, help me! A horrible thing has happened. My ox has died, and I have no animal to help me plow my field. Isn't this the worst thing that could have possibly happened?" The wise old man replied, "Maybe so, maybe not." The man hurried back to the village and reported to his neighbors that the wise man had gone mad. Surely this was the worst thing that could have happened. Why couldn't he see this? The very next day, however, a strong young horse was seen near the man's farm. Because the man had no ox to rely on, he had the idea to catch the horse to replace his ox, and he did. How joyful the farmer was! Plowing the field had never been easier. He went back to the wise man to apologize. "You were right, wise man. Losing my ox wasn't the worst thing that could have happened. It was a blessing in disguise. I never would have captured my new horse had that not happened. You must agree that this is the best thing that could have happened." The wise man replied once again, "Maybe so, maybe not." "Not again," thought the farmer. Surely the wise man had gone mad now. But once again, the farmer did not know what was to happen. A few days later, the farmer's son was riding the horse and was thrown off. He broke his leg and would not be able to help with the crop. "Oh no," thought the man, "now we will starve to death." Once again, the farmer went to the wise man. This time he said, "How did you know that capturing my horse was not a good thing? You were right again. My son is injured and won't be able to help with the crop. This time, I'm sure that this is the worst thing that could have possibly happened. You must agree this time." But just as he had done before, the wise man calmly looked at the farmer and in a compassionate tone replied once again, "Maybe so, maybe not." Enraged that the wise man could be so ignorant, the farmer stormed back to the village. The next day, troops arrived to take every able-bodied man to the war that had just broken out. The farmer's son was the only young man in the village who didn't have to go. He would live, while the others would surely die. The moral of this story provides a powerful lesson. The truth is, we don't know what's going to happen. We just think we do. Often, we make a big deal out of something. We blow up scenarios in our minds about all the terrible things that are going to happen. Most of the time, we're wrong. If we keep our cool and stay open to possibilities, we can be reasonably certain that, eventually, all will be well. Remember, maybe so, maybe not.
Acknowledge the totality of your being.
Zorba the Greek was said to have described himself as the whole catastrophe. The truth is, we're all the whole catastrophe, only we wish that we weren't. We deny the parts of ourselves that we deem unacceptable, rather than accepting the fact that we're all less than perfect. One of the reasons it's important to accept all aspects of yourself is that it allows you to be easier on yourself, more compassionate. When you act or feel insecure, rather than pretending to be together, you can open to the truth and say to yourself, "I'm feeling frightened, and that's okay." If you're feeling a little jealous, greedy, or angry, rather than deny or bury your feelings, you can open to them, which helps you move through them quickly and grow beyond them. When you no longer think of your negative feelings as a big deal or as something to fear, you will no longer